We're learning Perek Dalet of Sefer Yehoshua, so I'd like to finish the Perek tonight. We took a bit of a break in Perek Dalet because of Pesach, so just to review very quickly what's going on here in Perek Dalet. So essentially, the Perek begins with the people crossing through the Yarden. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yehoshua, I want you to appoint 12 people, one person for each Shevet, and I want you to tell them to go and take from the Yarden 12 stones and bring them with you to this place which the Pasuk in Pasuk Gimel refers to as a Malon, which we'll talk a little bit more about as we begin to conclude the Perek tonight. This Malon that you're going to stay at tonight. And Yehoshua calls these 12 people that he prepares, and he tells them, I want you guys to go up ahead, in front of the Aron. I want you to go into the Yarden to take 12 stones. Each person take a stone on your shoulder, and this will be an Os and a Zikaron, which will also, we talked about at the time. We'll talk about a little bit again tonight, and this will be a reminder for people. It'll be an Os. It'll be a sign for the people that experience the Nes. It'll be a reminder for the future generations to come about the Nes that happened. And that's what they did. The Pasuk says in Pasuk Ches that that's what Bnei Yisrael did. Just as Yehoshua said, they took these 12 stones and they went and they took them with them to this place called Malon, and they put them there. And then the Pasuk says that Yehoshua replaced these stones. He put 12 additional stones in the Yarden, right near where the Kohanim were standing, as a sign of exactly the location of the Nes. And the last pasuk we did was that the Kohanim were essentially standing, the Kohanim that were carrying the Aron, were standing in the Yarden until this whole matter finished, until all the people went through. And then just to focus on one thing at the end of Pasuk Yud, the pasuk says, very interestingly, Vayimaharu ha'am vayavoru. That's how Pasuk Yud ends, that the people hurried through the Yarden. So there was an amazing pshat that I saw in one of the Mefarshim. So he says, what's Vayimaharu? He says, well, why were the people in such a rush? Right? So on the simple level, you could say, well, they were in a rush because they were scared. Right? They were scared of we discussed this last week, they were scared of the waters. You know, there's a very tall wall of water that was, we're going to learn tonight also, the Gemara says, was over 300 mil tall, very, very, very tall, wall of water, and they were scared of the whole thing coming crashing down on them. So that's why they hurried through. You could say that on a simple level. One of the Mefarshim, I don't remember now which one, I had it written down, but I can't find it right this second. Let me just look quickly and see if I can spot it. One of the Mefarshim, oh, yeah, it's the Mitzudas David. The Mitzudas David says that what's Vayimaharu? Why did they hurry through? Ba'avur kivod ha'aron sha'amad ad avram. So he says that the Aron was waiting, the Kohanim and the Aron were waiting until everybody passed through, and then the Aron and the Kohanim would come out of the Yarden. So the people were worried about the kavod of the Aron. They didn't want to make the Aron wait too long. Right, an amazing thing. You know, we have a hard enough time, giving kavod to people, making people wait for us. But here, the Aron Bris Hashem, they wanted to be mechabe the Aron. They didn't want the Aron to have to wait there, too long. And therefore, vayimaharu, they hurried through in order to expedite the process so that the Aron would be able to get out of the Yarden as soon as possible. You know, we find Baruch Hashem. You know, we have different halachos and minhagim about kavod beis haknesses and kavod for sifrei Torah and things like that. But how careful they were, crossing through the Aron, that they literally hurried up so that not to be batriach the Aron, so to speak. So certainly we should, we have to be careful with the sifrei kodesh that we have, the sifrei Torah, and the beis haknesses that we have to ensure the proper kavod. I just thought it was an amazing mitzudas David focusing on the kavod of the Aron. Okay, so let's pick up here with Pasuk Yud Aleph. So Pasuk Yud Aleph reads, Vayikasher tam kol ha'om la'avor, when the entire nation finished crossing, Vayavor Aron Hashem ve'akohanim lifnei ha'om. And the Aron Hashem and the Kohanim all went lifnei ha'om, they went before the people. right? Literally before the people. So what's lifnei ha'am? What does it mean lifnei ha'am? Now, because if you think about it, it's lifnei ha'am is kind of strange because right now the people were ahead of the Aron because the Aron was stationary. The Aron was standing still in the Yarden, holding the waters back, and all the people were rushing through. And now, so what does it mean now? Vayavur Aron Hashem v'akohanim lifnei ha'am. So the Radak gives a couple of different pshatim. Either it means that the Aron Hashem was lifnei ha'am. It's not lifnei ha'am right now, but the Aron Hashem that was lifnei ha'am, it went ahead. It went in. It was the first thing to go into the Yarden. So at first it went into the Yarden, and then everybody else followed. Or he says that it's possible that maybe the whole Bnei Yisrael, again out of respect for the Aron, maybe they waited. They crossed through the Yarden, and they waited on the riverbanks. They didn't keep traveling. They waited there until everybody was through. Then the Aron came, and the Aron went back to the front of the line, and then they continued traveling with the Aron in front. That's another suggestion that he gives. The third suggestion is, and this is the one that Rashi works with also, is that lifnei ha'am does not mean literally in front of the people, but it means before their eyes. You know, they were watching this whole thing happening that the Kohanim and the Aron went through. But there's something amazing here. The Medrash, Rashi quotes the Medrash, and the Radak also quotes the Medrash. Others quote the Medrash. Some quoted a little bit later also, that they say, that the Medrash understands that the Kohanim and the Aron did not actually cross through the Yarden. Because keep in mind what happened. The Kohanim and the Aron stepped into the Yarden on the eastern bank of the river, right? They stepped right into the Yarden, and as soon as they stepped into the Yarden, what happened? The water stopped immediately. The water stopped and they stood still. They didn't keep walking, they stood still. So they're right at the edge, the eastern edge of the Jordan River. Now the Jewish people, Bnei Yisrael, are now traveling through the Yarden, right? They're all rushing through. So now, in order for the Kohanim and the Aron to get out, they either have to just climb back out on the eastern side, or they have to go across the Yarden and then get out on the western side. So Chazal say in the Medrash that they didn't cross over; they got back out on the eastern bank.
They retreated
back, meaning all Bnei Yisrael were on the western bank. And now the Aron and the Kohanim were on the eastern bank. They get back up on the eastern bank, Me'ever LaYarden. And what happens as soon as they get out? What's going to happen to the water? All the water comes back, right? The water now continues to flow. So now you have a strange thing because you have the Aron and the Kohanim on one side and Bnei Yisrael on the other side. So the Medrash says that Hashem specifically wanted it like this. Why? Because now how did the Aron get across? Miraculously. So now the Aron just floated right across, right above the water. It floated right across, and it took the Kohanim with it, okay, and floated right across the water. Why? And again, we see it again and again, Hashem wanted to be Marbe the Nisim, right? We have, you know, Nes upon Nes upon Nes in this whole episode. So here, Hashem wanted to end off with a grand finale, that this Nes would be that through all the water comes back, and now the Aron just floats right across the hovers right across the water with the Kohanim. The language that the Chazal use is Noseis Nosav, right? That the Aron carries the people that carry it, right? It carries the people that carry it, and we'll learn a little. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. But I just want to share one amazing line from the Radak. The Radak quotes this Medrash, and he does not like it. He doesn't like the Medrash. He says, I don't understand the Medrash. I don't know what this Nes was necessary for. You know, I'm not clear that it's necessary to even interpret the Pesukim this way. And he goes to town asking questions of this Medrash. Right? You know, he clearly is not a big fan of this Medrash. But how does the Radak end off? With the humility of the Radak, he ends off his comment after, you know, bashing, literally bashing the Medrash and asking all these questions on the Medrash. He ends off, Vehem she'amru Yadu Masha Amru. He says, but even though I don't understand this Medrash at all, he says, they understood. Chazal understood what they were saying. The ones that said this Medrash, they understood what they were saying. Kidatam Ruchava Midateinu. He says, they're much wiser than I am. They're much smarter than I am. They know a lot more than I do. And therefore, I'm going to ask my questions. But in the end, I'm going to conclude with humility that I'm not, that they knew what they were talking about. They must have, I just don't understand it. You know, such a humble way of speaking, you know, with reverence to Chazal. You know, unfortunately now, today, we have people who know probably, a thousandth of what the Radak knew and will just dismiss, you know, Midrashei Chazal because it doesn't fit with their perception of what's correct or what's appropriate. So they're dismissive, you know, Chazal didn't know what they were talking about, they made a mistake, you know, And here the Radak, who knew an incredible amount, is willing to say, listen, I don't understand it. Here are my questions on the Medrash, the following questions. But in the end of the day, Kidatam Ruchava Midateinu, I recognize that I have limitations. I recognize that they're a lot wiser than I am. They know a lot more. And we'll leave it at that. It's an incredible lesson in humility from the Radak. Okay. Pasuk Yud Beis, let's continue. Vayavru b'nei Reuven u'b'nei Gad v'chatzi shevet ha-Menashe. Very interesting. So all of a sudden, who do we have here? We're introduced again to the two and a half Shvatim, right? Reuven, Gad, and chatzi shevet Menashe. Okay? Now, we haven't really spoken about them too much. We spoke about them a little bit earlier in Sefer Yehoshua. But here, these were the Shvatim that, keep in mind, were going to settle on the eastern side of the Yarden, right? They weren't going to live in Eretz Yisrael. But we know that Moshe made them promise, right? Moshe made a tenai, he made a condition that they would have to come and wage war with Bnei Yisrael, not only with Bnei Yisrael, but even on the front lines with Bnei Yisrael. And they came, right? The pasuk here is emphasizing the fact that they made good on their promise and they came. Not only did they come, but they came chamushim lifnei Bnei Yisrael, kashur diber alei Moshe, just like Moshe told them. That's the way they came. It's interesting that the Alshich points out here that they didn't go first, right? They didn't go first. Why did they go first? Because they didn't want people to think, Yehoshua did not want Bnei Yisrael to rely on these troops. Here you had basically just soldiers coming to help them wage war. Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. So Yehoshua did not want them to rely on these people and put their trust in these soldiers. He wanted them to put their trust in Hashem. So these soldiers were there. Right, they were there to provide Bnei Yisrael with some sort of menuchas hanefesh and a little bit of common serenity and recognition that they're going to be okay because you have these soldiers here. But at the end of the day, they didn't go first. They didn't want them to put all their trust in these troops. It's interesting. Why does it say chamushim? You find it other places also in Tanakh referring to the soldiers as chamushim. So the Malbim says that the way that the troops used to be broken up, they would be broken up into groups of 50 men. It would be 50 men with like a captain, another 50 men with a captain. And he says that's why it's referred to as chamushim. That's the way the troops used to be broken up and used to travel in groups of 50. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Ke'arba'im elef chalutzei hatzava avru lifnei Hashem la'milchama el arvo siricha. So the pasuk says approximately 40,000 soldiers, again from Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, approximately 40,000 soldiers passed by, they came lifnei Hashem. What's the Lifnei Hashem here? It says the Mitzudas David. Lifnei Hashem means they're on a mission from Hashem. Right? They're on a mission from God. We're always Lifnei Hashem. Right? What does it mean that they were Lifnei Hashem? They were on a mission from God. Okay? They were on a godly mission here. And they came El Arvos Yericho. They came towards Yericho. That's where they're going to start their battle. Chalutzei Hatzava. Interesting. Like Chalutzim. Like the pioneers. So what does Chalutzei mean? So the Malbim says not all of them went. Right, we're not talking about all of the men of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. He says, if you do the math, there should be over 83,000 people, says the Malbim. And what does the Pasuk say here? How many went? Around 40,000. So only about half of the eligible men went to battle. So the Malbim says that they didn't, when Moshe made them promise, he didn't mean that every single, male had to go to battle. He just meant that they had to go, as soldiers. They had to send the military. And this was the military that they sent. I don't know what the selection process was. I don't know if it was a draft or a volunteer service. But either way, they sent about 40,000 men from Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. And they went, and they went L'Shem Hashem. The Malbim also says that L'Fnei Hashem also is that, they want them to recognize that this battle is going to be L'Shem Hashem. They're going here L'Shem Hashem because we're going into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to conquer the Holy Land. Hashem is going to be helping us. This is not just a battle of military might and strategy. This is a battle of Lifnei Hashem.
They had to leave half the army back to protect the women and children.
Ah, interesting. Okay. That could be also.
Otherwise, they would have been invaded right away if they had no military left there.
Right, very interesting. So maybe they had to leave some people behind. They needed some people to protect, leaving the older women and children behind. Good. Okay, Pasuk Yudalid. Vayom hahu gidal Hashem es Yehoshua be'inei kol Yisrael. Vayiru also kasher yoru es Moshe kol yimechayav. Very interesting pasuk. Here all of a sudden, the Navi inserts that on this day, this day when we had this splitting of the Yarden, Hashem made the he raised the stature of Yehoshua in the eyes of the Jewish people. Right? The stature of Yehoshua was raised in the eyes of the Jewish people, and they feared him. Vayiru, either they were in awe of him, perhaps probably more of an awe than a fear. Right? They weren't afraid of Moshe and Yehoshua, but they were in awe. They were in awe of Yehoshua, just like they were in awe of Moshe, Kol Yimei Chaya, throughout the time of Moshe's life. So too now they were in awe of of Yehoshua. The Radak points out that here, you know, for both Moshe and Yehoshua, Hashem created a very similar type of nes. For Moshe, created Kriyas Yamsuf, right? And that's Vayaminu Ba'Hashem Uve Moshe Avdo. Pasuk testifies to us that they believed very strongly in Moshe following Kriyas Yamsuf. And here, in order to engender a similar type of awe for Yehoshua, right, Hashem does a very similar miracle. He splits the Yarden, or again, not as much splits, but he stops the waters of the Yarden, a similar type of miracle. We'll see that the Perek is going to conclude also with bringing in these two elements of Kriyas Yamsuf, you know, comparing Kriyas Yamsuf and the drying up of the Yarden River. So here also, this was in order to engender a sense of awe for Yehoshua. Okay. So let's look at the next few psukim. The next few psukim really have to be read together in order to understand what's happening. So the pasuk says, let's read pasuk tezvav. Vayomer Hashem al Yehoshua leimor. Hashem says to Yehoshua that he should say, Tzavei el ha-kohanim, I'm sorry, Tzavei es ha-kohanim nosei aron ha-idus v'yalu min ha-yarden. Tell the kohanim that it's time to come up from the Yarden. They have to come up, right? They're standing there, they got to come up. Time to get out of the Yarden. Vayitzav, Yehoshua es ha-kohanim leimor, alu min ha-yarden. So Yehoshua does it. He commands the kohanim, saying, you know, get out of the Yarden. Time to get out. Vayihi ka'alos ha-kohanim nosei aron bris Hashem mitoch ha-yarden. And when it happened, the kohanim got out, nitku kapos ragli ha-kohanim el ha-charava. The feet of the kohanim touched the charava, touched the dry land. Okay, we'll see exactly what that word charava means. Vayashuvu mehayarden limkomam vayelchu kismo shilshom al kol gidosav. And the waters of the Yarden returned to their place, and the waters carried on as usual, you know, upon the riverbanks, carried on as usual. They you know, it went through. So you know, the Radak and other mafarshim point out that we already read in pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayavor Aron Hashem vaKohanim lifnei ha'am. Right, we already said that the Kohanim went out of the Yarden, essentially. So here they point out, here the pasuk is just going back to describe exactly how it happened. Meaning we did already mention that this happened, but we're going back to describe exactly how it happened. And it's interesting, you know, why did the Kohanim have to wait for a command from Yehoshua? Why didn't they just look around? They see there's no one left, right? All the Jewish people have gone to the other side of the Yarden, so let them look behind. They're going to look for any stragglers. Okay, everybody's out, let's go, right? Pick up the rear, and let's get out of the Yarden. Well, why did they needed a specific command from Yehoshua? So it's fascinating. So the Alshech says that they didn't want people to think, Yehoshua specifically, or Hashem really, in this case, you know, commanding Yehoshua, did not want people to think that the reason why the Kohanim ran out was because, number one, they were afraid, or they saw the water start to return. You know, okay, maybe everybody's out, so now the water, they see the water starting to creep in, so the Kohanim have to run out, right? They wanted to make it very clear that nothing is going to happen until the Kohanim get out of there, right? The Kohanim could stay there all day, and the water will just remain like a wall, right? Nothing's going to happen as long as the Kohanim were there. So the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that clear was by telling Yehoshua, I don't want the Kohanim to move until you command them, right? And Yehoshua now is going to give the command, and the Kohanim are going to move. That's number one. So it's very clear that that's the case. It's interesting also that here the Alshech also points out that here this is really connected with the previous pasuk. What did the previous pasuk say in pasuk Yudalid? That Bayomahu Gidal Hashem is Yehoshua b'nei kol Yisrael. That now Hashem raised the stature of Yehoshua in the eyes of Yisrael. If Hashem wants the Kohanim to wait until Yehoshua gives the command, what's going to happen now? Yehoshua gives the command, the Kohanim go out, and now the water returns. So what do the people see? The people don't just see the miracle, right? They don't just see that a miracle happened to B'nai Yisrael in the merit of the Aron or in the merit of Yehoshua. But they see Yehoshua is actually controlling things. Until Yehoshua gives the command for the Kohanim to exit, the Kohanim are staying put in the water, staying still. Yehoshua gives the command, the Kohanim will come out, and the water goes down. So we see that Yehoshua, Hashem wanted specifically Yehoshua to give this command, because you see that he wanted the Bnei Yisrael to see that Yehoshua's pulling strings here. Yehoshua is the one manipulating nature, again, of course, with the Siyata Deshmaya, with Hashem's help. And he says also, that's why he doesn't say, Ko Amar Hashem. Yehoshua, when he spoke to the Kohanim, didn't say, Ko Amar Hashem, this is what Hashem says, come out of the river. It just says, Alu Mina Yarden, get out. Right? That's what Yehoshua said. Because this just reinforced, in the eyes of Bnei Yisrael, the power that Yehoshua had, the greatness of Yehoshua, and how ready he was to be the next leader of the Jewish people. Okay, it's interesting, the Charava here, right, it says that their feet touch the Charava. So the Malbim, just on a linguistic point, the Malbim says that the word Charava can mean one of two things. It can either mean that there was an area of land that had water on it, and now that land was completely dried out, or he says it can mean a land that's a little bit moist. So he says here, it has to mean the land's a little bit moist. Why? Because they're stepping out from the Yarden, which is completely dry at this point, they're stepping out onto the riverbank. So if they're stepping out onto the riverbank, says the Malbim, that the riverbank was probably still a little bit soggy, still a little bit wet, because the miracle didn't happen to the riverbank, the miracle happened in the river itself. So they're stepping out to the Charava, meaning they're stepping out to the riverbank, which is still a little bit soggy. The Rashi also points out here. He also mentions that earlier medrash that it just says that they got up. It says alu min hayarden vayihi ka'alos hakohanim. So Rashi says this language supports the medrash that we quoted earlier. Why? Because if the Aron and the Kohanim traveled through the Yarden and then got out on the western side, would it just say vayihi ka'alos hakohanim? Vayihi ka'alos hakohanim implies that they got up. They just stepped out. They didn't cross. But it doesn't say anywhere here that they crossed. It just says that they stepped out of they stepped out from where they were. So Rashi says the language seems to indicate, like this Medrash says, that they just stepped out on the eastern side and had to get across through a miracle. Okay, Rashi here also makes the connection later in Sefer Shoftim, when we know that the Aron was, you might remember the story from Sefer Shoftim, the Aron was taken captive, and then when the Aron was returned, it was returned on a wagon, and at one point the Aron almost fell out of the wagon, and there was a man by the name of Uzzah who tried to catch the Aron. Now, keep in mind, you could not touch the Aron, right? The Aron could only be carried by its poles, by the Levim, or in this case, with the Kohanim, but otherwise you couldn't just touch the Aron. So what happened? Uzzah died, right? Uzzah died. And Rashi points out that here, really, Uzzah should have made a Kal v'chomer. Because here, how did the Aron and the Kohanim get across? The Aron hovered right across the Yarden, and the Aron was no sayas nosav. It carried those that carry it, right? It was the one that carried the Kohanim. So says Rashi, if the Aron can carry the Kohanim across, certainly the Aron doesn't have to worry about itself. Right, certainly the Aron would have been okay. The Aron would not have fallen to the ground. So Uzzah, the fact that he tried to grab the Aron and touch it, and again, his intentions were good, but he was misguided. He didn't understand the Kedusha of the Aron. He didn't understand the sanctity of the Aron, what the Aron was capable of. And Rashi seems to be pointing out he didn't understand this concept of no sayas nosav. And this is a very interesting concept, just in terms of Musar also. It's interesting to think about the fact that the Aron and the Torah are no sayas nosav. The Torah carries us. We need the Torah more than the Torah needs us. The Torah doesn't need us. The Torah is pristine. The Torah is perfect in its own right. The Torah does not need us to do anything to it, or we need the Torah. We need the Torah as a guidebook. We need the Torah as an Eitz Chaim, as a lifeline. That's what we need. But it's nosei, it's nosei. It carries us more than we carry it. I remember hearing a story. Sometimes it's spoken about in Eretz Yisrael. The concept of Torah protecting, right? That the Torah is megin. So certainly, I'm not getting into any draft discussions right now, and you know, army draft discussions. But the concept is a true concept. I'm not talking about the application, but the concept is a true concept that the Torah is making. We believe that the Torah is the Torah protects us. Again, that doesn't mean that we don't have to do our own hishtadlus and we don't have to put in our own due diligence to protect ourselves. But there is an element. There's an idea of the Torah protecting. I once heard a beautiful story. It was around the time of Operation Tsuketan, and there was a family that that had two twin boys. And one of the boys was studying in yeshiva, and one of the boys was in the army. This was in Eretz Yisrael. And if you remember, Operation Tsuketan happened during during the summertime, and it was Ben Azmanim. It was vacation, you know, for the yeshivas. So one of the boys called up his mother. The boy in yeshiva called his brother was on the front lines. You know, he was in Gaza. And the brother in yeshiva calls up his mother and he says, "Ma, I just want to let you know I'm not coming home for vacation. I'm not coming home for Ben Azman." So she says, "What are you talking about? What are you not coming home yet?" In Eretz Yisrael, they have 3 weeks vacation. It's not like here where they have 8 weeks. You know, they can afford a couple of weeks. They have 3 weeks vacation. She said, "What do you mean you're not coming home?" He said, "If my brother's on the front lines, I'm not leaving the Beis Medrash. If my brother's fighting in the front lines, then I'm going to be in the Beis Medrash learning so that he has a degree of protection from the Torah." So you see the concept of the Torah being Megan. Again, you need both. You need people to fight, and you need the military, and we need to do our hishtadlus. But at the same time, we need the Torah also to be Megan. There's a story. You know, a lot of times you'd have Chassidus Shemaisim told about the different rebbes. You know, this miracle happened to this rebbe, and that miracle happened to that rebbe. So I'm not such a Chassidus person. I'm more of a Litvak. But there's a Maisa told about Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky is as Litvish as they come, right? He's one of the Gedolim in Bnei Brak, and he's not Chassidish by any really stretch of the imagination. But there's a story, like a Chassidish Maisa that's told about Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and the Maisa goes as follows. He's a tremendous masmid, obviously. He learns all the time, and he has a certain kviyas that he learns every single day. He has a certain amount of blood. He learns, you know, he finishes Shas, you know, at least once a year. But he finishes, you know, on Erev Pesach every year, he makes a siyum on Kol HaTorah Kula. I made a siyum on Maseches Tainus this year. He makes a siyum on Kol HaTorah Kula. Bavli, Yerushalmi, Sifra, Midrashim, everything. He finishes everything every year, and he makes a siyum on Erev Pesach for Tainus Bechorim. So what does he do on a leap year? He's got an extra month, right? So what does he do? He doesn't play golf for the month. So he writes a sefer. Every year when there's an Adar Sheni, he has an extra month, so he learns, he writes a sefer on a certain topic. And he has a whole bunch of sfarim out, and some of them are very esoteric topics, you know, topics that other people don't really write about. So he wrote one sefer on the topic of chagavim, on grasshoppers. Very interesting topic in halacha, but there are different halachas about grasshoppers, and you know, especially when it comes to kashrus, we don't really eat grasshoppers, but there are sfarim who have certain kabbalas. And he wrote all these halachos about grasshoppers, you know, that appear in the Torah. That was his sefer 1 year. So the story goes, this is the only type of story that I've heard like this about him. But the story goes that there was one type of grasshopper that he couldn't picture in his mind. You know, from all the descriptions that he found in the Sfarim, he couldn't quite picture this grasshopper. And the legend goes that as he was writing this sefer, all of a sudden the grasshopper just appeared like on the windowsill, and he was able to see it. And he saw exactly what and right away it clicked for him that this was the grasshopper that they were referring to, and he was able to continue to write his sefer, whatever chidushim he needed to write about this grasshopper, and then the grasshopper left. And when he was asked about this, you know, people were like amazed, like, you know, it's like it's a nisim, you know, he must be a chassidish rebbe. People were amazed, and they asked him this question, and he said he was like incredulous. He's like, of course, like he didn't understand why people were so amazed. He said, I needed to write this sefer, I needed to write this halacha. And there was no way for me to write it without seeing the grasshopper. So of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked it out that I would be able to see a grasshopper. It's not a nace. You know, it's just, you know, Hashem, you know, just to, you know, move things around a little bit. So to enable me to see it. But you see the concept of the Arum is Nosei is Nosef. That the Arum carries, you know, those who really trust in the Torah and dedicated to the Torah and study the Torah carries us, the Torah protects us. Again, not to say that we don't have to do our own hishtadlus, but we have to recognize the importance of the Torah carrying us as well. Yeah. Well, it was falling.
It was falling.
So the way Rashi understands it is that it would not have fallen to the ground. It would have maybe fallen out of the wagon, and maybe just would have, again, Bnei Yisrael were taken to task for putting it in a wagon to begin with, right? That Aaron should not be put in a wagon. Well, they should have carried it.
You're talking the nace that it carries itself.
Well, again, well, one second. The Aron, like, keep in mind, the Aron didn't just carry itself all the time. Meaning, it wasn't like, you know, throughout the midbar, it was just hovering around.
I can't understand how you learn the Kal v'chomer. That's exactly what I'm saying.
You know what I mean?
If it doesn't carry itself all the time,
right?
Then how can you learn the Kal v'chomer back from the Aron?
I think what Rashi's saying is that it certainly wouldn't have fallen to the ground. Meaning, if it has the capability, we know the Aron has the capability of carrying itself.
Able to be captured.
Right. So you're saying then also it could have fallen to the ground.
Absolutely. You mean to tell me that the Pelishtim just...
Right, they captured it. Yeah, and I hear what you're saying. What are you saying, Andre?
That's what he was thinking. That because it's falling, therefore it's going to fall to the ground.
Right. Or maybe, as Erwin's saying, maybe because it was captured, so then also there's a pagam in the Kedusha, maybe. There's something inherently wrong. But you see, he was mistaken.
The wagon.
Right. But you see, he was punished. And again, you know, when we get to Shoftim, we'll learn that story. But you see, he was punished for it. So obviously, he made some sort of mistake. So maybe that was the mistake in the calculation. That he should have realized that even though, okay, maybe this was just a message that it shouldn't be in the wagon, but not that it's going to fall to the ground. It's not going to fall to the ground. Right? I hear what you're saying, though. Another interesting thing here that I didn't think about until I saw the Mefarshim here is that there's another element of the miracle here. Because what happens when the Kohanim step out of the Yarden? What happens to all the water?
It comes down.
Now, if you go with Chazal, you go with what the Gemara says, that you're talking about a wall of water that's about 300 mil high, right? Incredibly, incredibly high, you know, miles and miles and miles high of water. So what's going to happen when that water comes crashing down? It's going to totally flood the whole surrounding area, right? So many of the Mefarshim, the Malbim and the Radak, all say that there was another element of the Nes here, that didn't happen. Right? They say it in different ways. The Radak says that it came down very slowly. It kind of just like slowly, you know, made its way back into the Yarden. And the Malbim seems to say that it did come crashing down, right? Once the Kohanim came out, it came crashing down, but just it was miraculously contained by the banks of the river, when really it should have just completely overflowed. And the Malbim says it should have really killed all the Jews, right? Because keep in mind, the Bnei Yisrael are standing on the riverbank now. They crossed and now they're standing there. So if the water came crashing down, it would have just flooded the whole area. It would have just wiped out the whole Jewish nation. So the Malbim says it was miraculously contained by the riverbank, even though really it shouldn't have been. But that was an added level of miracle here. Okay, let's keep going. So Pasuk Yutes. V'ha'am alumina yarden be'asur la'chodesh harishon v'yachanu ba'gilgol b'k'tzei mizrach yericho. So the people came out, the Pasuk, we already learned about this towards the beginning of the parak, that this all happened on the 10th of Nisan, right? The 10th of Nisan is when this happened. And where did they settle? They settled in Gilgal, which is to the east of Yericho. Okay, Rashi points out that this is the Malon, right? Where the Psukim earlier in the parak kept referring to this Malon, that we want the 12 representatives to go place the stones in the Malon that you're going to sleep overnight, right? We call a hotel a Malon. But the Rashi says Malon here refers to Gilgal. That was the place that they were going to rest, that they were going to sleep that night. So that's where they went. It's interesting. We mentioned this earlier, you know, a couple weeks ago when we spoke about this. But the Rashi also points out here that Gilgal was over 60 mil away. It was over 60 mil. And Rashi says that they made it there in one day, which is a tremendous miracle. Right? So we said also an additional level of miracle here is that the Bnei Yisrael were able to travel, men, women, and children, were able to travel over 60 mil to get to Gilgal back, you know, it's just literally in one day. And that's it. The Malbim says, you know, why are we being so specific here? We have to emphasize where, you know, when exactly this nes happened. It happened on the 10th of Nisan, and we're very specific with the location where they settled, where they came out, and everything. You know, so the Malbim says that you know, people would make a mistake here to say, and they would attribute this whole thing to nature, and they would say, you know what? Maybe Yehoshua was really he was a scientist. He wasn't really such a righteous person. He was a scientist. And he was able to figure out exactly when the forces of nature would create, a landmass in the middle of the Yarden, where the water would pull back because of the moon and because of the tides, maybe that the Yarden would pull back and it would dry up in the middle and the Jews would be able to cross over. So the Malbim says that's why the Psukim here go into such detail that this was a completely supernatural event. There's no way to attribute this to nature. Even the timing, he says, the fact that Vayimaharu, that the Jews, you know, the Bnei Yisrael hurried through, and still nothing happened until the Kohanim stepped out. He says everything in this story points to the fact that this was a Masa, this was Maisa Nisim. This was a Kadosh Baruch Hu at work here. This was not just a natural order of things. You know, not to make that mistake that the people think. He says anyways, he says the Yarden is not subject to the tides. Right? It's interesting. He writes ebb and flow in the you know, in the Perush of the Malbim. He writes in parentheses ebb and flow. You know, high tide and low tide. I guess he's talking about. But he says, you know, the Yarden is a river. It's not subject to the tides in the way that other things are. It's not going to dry up in the middle. So he says that's why we're being so specific here. Let's see, Pasuk Chaf. So these 12 stones that the men took out of the Yarden, Yehoshua placed in the Gilgal. Now keep in mind that in Pasuk Ches earlier, Yehoshua already told these people to run up ahead and to go put the stones, you know, in Gilgal. So here the Pasuk is repeating the fact that they put the stones there, and here it's to be making it dependent on Yehoshua. So the Malbim points out here that if you remember earlier in the parak, we said that these stones really served a dual function. They served, number one, as an os, as a sign for the people that experienced this nace, you know, as a sign of the nace. But they also are going to serve as a zikaron, as a reminder for the future generations about the nace and about all that happened in this nace. So the Malbim says that originally, when the 12 men, when the 12 representatives went and put the stones in Gilgal, that was for the os. That was for the os, the sign for the people of that generation. Here, Yehoshua came to Gilgal. When he got there, he rearranged the stones. And it says he himself rearranged the stones as a zikaron, as a reminder for the future generation. So he says that these two elements are both present in both what the people are doing and what Yehoshua himself is doing as well. The Rabbag also mentions here that why were they placed specifically in Gilgal? Because the Mishkan was going to be built in Gilgal. And we find that we often want to have reminders of Nisim and reminders of the Hashgachas Hashem. We want to have that in the Mishkan, in the Aron. We find that the Tzinsenes Haman, like the little jug of Man that was left over, was placed in the Aron because we wanted it to be there as a sign, the Mate Aron, right, the staff of Aron that had sprouted the almonds from the story of Korach, that was also placed in the Aron. So along the same lines, here too, we have these stones being placed in Gilgal, where the Mishkan is going to be built, to remind everyone of the Nisim that happened. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayomer el b'nei Yisrael le'mor asher yishalun b'neichem b'chares avosam le'mor. Maha avonim ha'ele. Right, so again, Yehoshua is reminding the Jewish people what these stones are for. When your sons ask you tomorrow, they ask they ask their fathers, Maha avonim ha'ele, what are these stones? And they will tell their sons. And the Alshech points out here that we're referring to three generations. Why? Because he says probably by the third generation, people start to forget already. The second generation, the kids, you know, okay, they hear the stories. You know, they hear the stories from their parents of how they crossed over. The next generation, you know, they forget already. We're going to have a Mirtz Hashem, we're commemorating Yom HaShoah on Wednesday, right, Wednesday night. So, you know, this is the type of thing that we think about. The children of the Holocaust survivors, they grew up hearing all the stories, the ones that told the stories, right? They heard all the stories. They lived with the ideas of what happened and the history of what happened and the atrocities of the Holocaust. The next generation, you know, it's watered down a little bit as each subsequent generation, goes through history. The stories get watered down. The impact of what happened, the emotional impact of what happened, it gets diluted a little bit. And needs to be reinforced. That's why the Alshech says we're referring here to the second generation. We're talking about the Beneichem, and then the next pasuk, the Hodatim, is Beneichem. Right? They're going to tell the next generation the same thing. And the Alshech also points out that earlier in pasuk Ches, when the representatives put down the stones, how was the question phrased? Maha avanim ha'ele lochem. We know what the stones are, but we're just not sure of what their significance is, what their import is for you. Here, what's the question of the third generation? Mahavanim ha'ela. What are these stones? We don't even know what the stones are. As he points out, it's such a powerful idea that often, as time goes on, as the generations go on, you know, the assumptions, the basic foundations and assumptions have to be reinforced. Not just the connections, not just the significance, but the basic foundations, the basic assumptions have to be reinforced. You know, it's not just maha avanim ha'ila lachem, but it's maha avanim ha'ila. You know, what are these stones? We don't even know what they are. You know, and so often you hear the questions that kids ask today. It's like, you know, it's almost like, you know, what is this thing? What is this Torah that we have here? You know, what are these things? You know, all the foundations and the assumptions have to be reinforced as the generations continue to weaken and to be diluted. And in Pasuk, the Al-Sheikh also says a beautiful thing. He says that if you think about it, he says the 12 stones represent the 12 Shvatim. And he says this reminds us of the story with Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, when he went to rest and he saw the dream of the angel going up and down the ladder. So what did he take? What did he put surrounding his head? He took 12 stones, representing the 12 Shvatim. And says the Al-Sheikh, that's also the 12 stones here. The same 12 stones representing the 12 Shvatim. There, what happened? Chazal tells us miraculously, all the 12 stones merged into one stone. They were fighting with one another. They merged into one stone. What does the merge teach us, says the Al-Sheikh? The merge teaches us that even though there are 12 Shvatim, they're all really one. The Achdus of the 12 Shvatim. Here he says, if you look at the language in Pasuk Chaf Beis, what does it say? V'avdatim es b'neichem le'omar b'yavasha avar Yisrael es hayarden hazeh. Lashon yachid. In the singular. We have 12 stones. There were 12 Shvatim that passed through. But it's really avar Yisrael. It's one people. It's one nation. It's a unified nation, just like we had in the times of Yaakov Avinu. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, and we'll just conclude the last two psukim. Asher hovish Hashem Elokeichem, esmei hayarden mipneichem ad avrechem kasher asa Hashem Elokeichem liyamsuf, asher hovish mipaneinu ad avarnu. Here again we have this connection between the drying up of the Yarden, or the blockage of water in the Yarden, and kriyas yamsuf. We have them both mentioned here. And then in Pasuk Chaf Dal, l'man das kolamei haoretz es yad Hashem, ki chazakah, so that all the nations of the world will know that Kadosh Baruch Hu is strong. L'man yirasem es Hashem Elokeichem kol hayamim, so that you will fear Kadosh Baruch Hu all of the days. The Malbim says that both miracles, the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf and the miracle of the Yarden, both had two goals. When it came to Kriyas Yamsuf, the goal of the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf was not just to get the Jewish people through the Yamsuf, but also was also to scare the nations of the world. The nations of the world should hear about Kriyas Yamsuf, should sit there a little bit and recognize the might of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the power of Bnei Yisrael, and that Bnei Yisrael should be in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So the nations of the world should fear, and Bnei Yisrael should be in awe. Here the Malbim says that the Pasuk in Pasuk Chavdalit seems to be saying that, number one, we want the people who didn't witness Kriyas Yamsuf, or who didn't hear about Kriyas Yamsuf. Keep in mind, we're now 40 years later. Right? Many people didn't witness it, and many more people didn't even hear about it, or they heard about it, and it was 40 years ago, and now they kind of forgot about it, or forgot the significance of it. We want to remind everyone what Kriyas Yamsuf was and the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and also for generations, for the Jewish people for generations, not just the people that were Yotzei Mitzrayim who all died out by now, because now a new generation is coming into the land of Israel, but now we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be remembered by all the generations. So this is really a continuation. It's not just a completely new nace. It's a continuation of this nace, the nace of Kriyas Yamsuf, leading into the nace of the Yarden going into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, Mirtz Hashem, next week we'll pick up with Perek Hei.